Cuomo News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
Alisa Jaffe in this afternoon for Ken Schramm, taking a few days off. Could Hurricane Isaac derail the GOP convention? We're seeing that this tropical storm is gaining a lot of strength and expected to become a hurricane Thursday, just as the Republican convention gets underway. Rob Wood is a UW atmospheric physicist, and he is with us this afternoon. Rob, before we go on to some of the other things we want to talk to you about, what do you think? Could Isaac derail the GOP?
You know, I'm really not the expert you want to be talking to in terms of hurricane prediction. I'm sure there's a good chance it could disrupt the convention, but I think it's really hard to predict these storms. They are one of the difficult things is really predicting the direction in which they go, and there's great improvements being made in that area, but it's a really tough call.
It is a tough call, but you do know what's happening in the clouds and how they affect global warming, and there's something that's new that's out there that is talking about an experiment to prevent global warming with adding sea salt into the clouds. I can't even begin to understand how that could work.
Yeah, well, clouds basically cool our planet. Anyone who lives in Seattle is very familiar with the idea that cool clouds help cool the surface. What this idea is trying to do is basically make those clouds brighter, such that they reflect more sunlight to space. That means less sunlight getting through to us. That means we can cool the planet. Now, if you do this globally, the idea is you try to increase the number of particles in the clouds, the number of droplets in the cloud, and that increases their surface area and the amount of reflection they can make for the sunlight. So that's the basic idea. What we're trying to really propose here is a way of critically testing this idea, not globally by any means, but just doing it over a very small region of the planet.
Okay, so you go up into the sky and you use sea salt to inject into the clouds. Why sea salt? The stuff that I am sprinkling on my food at night?
Yeah, well, believe it or not, clouds over the oceans, a lot of the particles in them are basically sea salt. Naturally, the wind moving over the ocean surface creates bubbles. Those bubbles burst. Sea salt goes up into the atmosphere. And many of the particles in the clouds are consisting essentially of sea salt or formed on sea salt. What we're trying to do here is argue that if we increase that natural process by artificially pumping sea salt through sprayers, we can basically augment the number of particles in those clouds and make them brighter.
That takes a lot of sea salt.
It takes a lot of sea salt. You'd be surprised how little it takes, actually, overall.
Really? Help me to understand. So if I've got a handful of sea salt, can that help one cloud become brighter?
Yeah, you would be very surprised, because these particles are about 100 nanometers, and that means they are basically thousands of times smaller than the human hair's width. And so you get a lot of these particles for not very much of the actual sea salt mass. And so, you know, you can spray a surprisingly relatively small amount of sea salt. We're talking, you know, the order of tons, you know, in a day over the entire planet would be sufficient to actually do this brightening in principle.
Rob Wood, a UW atmospheric physicist with us, talking about how sea salt might be able to help us push away global warming, if there is such a possibility. How do you get the sea salt into the clouds?
So, yeah, the particles, I said, were very small. And so what you have to do is just create the particles near the ocean surface. They essentially then loft on the air currents in the atmosphere and naturally will go up into the clouds. We know this can occur because there are we see on satellite images that ships that put out particles, diesel-burning ships over the ocean, container vessels, can actually make this occur, make the clouds brighter. We have seen evidence of that.
But do you drop it from airplanes?
You know, I think the general idea is probably the most efficient way to do it would be to essentially take seawater and pump it through on a ship, pump it through these kind of high-pressure nozzles and produce very small particles, and then just let them go into the ship stack in the same way that, you know, any ship would produce
how it would produce smoke.
Yeah.
But you're now adding sea salt into the areas, and then that would go up into the sky, into the clouds, and then actually impact the clouds. And so you would see if they would break up a little bit and become brighter. And by being brighter, that means it reduces the global temperature, you think, or you know?
We don't know what would happen in practice, which is why actually we're sort of putting forward this idea that we should do a small-scale test of it. Our models tell us, we have kind of sophisticated computer models that tell us that this, in principle, can work. But some of those models require constant testing and with field data, be it either an experiment like this or other field observations. So we need to basically test this model, test this idea out in the local small-scale experiment to see if it could possibly work if extrapolated to the globe.
You're way too smart for me. What were you doing sitting around thinking of this? How did it come about, Rob?
Well, it's not my idea, actually. It goes back to a paper written by John Latham, a professor in the University of Manchester in the UK in 1990, who just suggested this is an idea. But actually, you know, the history of it goes back before that, when it was first realized that the reflectivity of clouds could actually be dependent upon the small particles that they ingest.
Okay, so his paper talked about that. Then where did it go from there? How did you turn it into, okay, I'm going to shoot this into the sky?
Yeah, well, there was a very influential paper written in about 2006 by a Nobel Prize winner, and he kind of scared everybody into saying, well, this is, you know, this kind of geoengineering is actually feasible. You know, in principle, he was talking specifically about stratospheric, putting particles into the stratosphere, but it's a similar kind of concept that we're managing solar radiation. And it got a lot of really serious scientists interested in this idea and thinking, we ought to research this. We ought to know a little bit more about whether this is actually feasible or not. And so I kind of came into it because I realized this had the potential to work, but at the same time, I'm very worried that you know, we're not cutting our emissions of greenhouse gases down, so the temperature's rising, and you know, if we need to do something about it, and we should explore various avenues. That's my feeling.
It's amazing, though, that we as man could create the problem, and that maybe there is a way to create a solution. What do you say to the people who say, come on, this is a bunch of bunk, there's no global warming, what are you worried about with this? Is your head in the clouds?
Well, yeah, I mean, people who say there's no global warming probably need they've got their head in the clouds, because you know, the evidence is out there. I mean, we can choose to ignore it if we wish, but there pretty much is, you know, as we move through the 21st century, what we're going to see is more and more evidence of that. Greenhouse gases are causing significant warming in temperature, and if, you know, what happens if, for example, this causes some catastrophic events like melting of Greenland ice sheet, there could be huge consequences, and we ought to be aware. This may not be a problem that's going to really hit home until 50 years from now, but we ought to know about it.
When are you guys going to try this experiment?
Well, that's really uncertain at this point. What we really intended to do with this study is really just put it out to the community, the scientific community, as an idea for an experiment. What we're going to need is the scientific community to say, hey, this is a worthwhile experiment to do. We should do this. And there's no guarantee that the scientific community are going to agree with this. They may have other ideas about how best to do this kind of experiment. And then it's a politically sensitive idea, so, you know, I don't know if this experiment is ever going to get done. I'm hoping some people with sophisticated computer models will simulate this experiment and try and tell us where we've gone wrong and if it is a feasible experiment to do. But I think just getting the idea out was the purpose of our paper.
Well, Rob Wood, it's fascinating, and I know we're talking about what's going on in the clouds, but most of it was over my head. I really appreciate you taking the time to help us understand a little bit more about this. Thank you, Rob Wood.
This is Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
219, Elisa Jaffe in for the vacationing Ken Schramm. And you can normally catch me weekday mornings on 570 KVI. We've been talking for about a week and a half about this Taylor Bridge fire and all the damage that's been done. So many acres charred, more than 20,000 acres charred, dozens of homes burned. Jessica McDaniel, we were speaking with Jessica last week, and she said, I have no idea if my home is standing or not, because she was evacuated. And we've been waiting and wondering what's happened with Jessica, and she's on the line with us. Jessica, what have you found out?
Hi. We have found out last night that we were able to go home and that our house is standing and it's in excellent shape.
It is in excellent shape. Okay, we've seen some of the pictures where the ground is charred all the way up to the front door. What did you notice at your house?
We noticed that everything was completely intact. Just above our property line, there was charred trees and black ground, but as far as our home, it was in excellent shape. No smoke damage whatsoever. So they did a fabulous job.
What a relief that must have been, because what was it like this last week, sitting and waiting and wondering?
It was terrifying, just sitting there watching the fire happen about a mile away and wondering, wow, what are we going to come home to? This can't be good.
And so, finally, you get to go in, because they're saying now it's 90% contained, but we're just starting to see a lot of the damage. What, you've got a lot of neighbors, I'm sure, who are maybe not faring as well as you.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a few neighbors that we know of that are homeless as of now. So we're all just trying to band together and give them our support as much as we can.
What was happening in the community while this was going on? Where did you end up staying with family, friends, and what kind of relationship did you develop with your neighbors? Because you're all sort of bonding over a tragic situation.
Yeah, we are. We were fortunate enough to be staying in the Nordstrom family home, their ranch across the highway. We were able to stay there for free. They had great hospitality for us. And as a community, everyone just grew so close together. Everyone was there for each other no matter what. Put everything aside for this week and just was there for each other. So it was great.
And Jessica, when you had to get out of there, you told me a little about it, but for those who weren't listening, tell us about how much time you had and what did you get a chance to take out of the house, and including animals?
We had about a half an hour to gather our belongings. We grabbed senior pictures, all of our photo albums when we were kids. Grabbed the dogs, the cats, the horses, the goats, all of that just as quickly as possible. Tried to figure out where we were going to stay, tried to come up with a plan, just trying to get everything in order.
What did you realize in this time? You've had a lot of time for reflection on what's important in your world.
It was definitely family and friends. You find out how much you care about each other. And who cares for you? All the friends that you didn't know were actually there, were there for you. And that was a great feeling.
Oh, that's interesting. Did you not realize that before?
No, especially people that I went to high school with. You know, you kind of have that high school mentality. And then when you get out into the real world, you don't realize that they're still there. And in times like these, everyone showed up. So that was amazing.
When you drove up to the driveway yesterday and got to a chance to check out the house, how close had the fire been? How many feet to your house?
It was about a football field away.
Oh, that's close.
Yeah, it was a little scary. We got extremely lucky.
What about the animals now? You bringing them back home?
We will bring them home this afternoon. We kind of let them stay where they were this afternoon just to let them kind of calm down, not scare them out too much. But yeah, so they're still where they're at right now.
Now, they say it's 90% contained, but what do you smell? What do you see when you're on the scene there?
We don't see too much, but the smell is definitely still there, the smoke. So we haven't really unpacked anything, just in case. We're just trying to lay low, stay home still, wait to see what happens, just in case something does happen, we are still prepared.
Oh, that's interesting. So you get to go home, but you're still a little bit nervous about a flare-up again?
Exactly, yeah. You know, it's hard to get the real story because there's so many different rumors going around from different people, different neighbors, different firefighters. So you just have to be prepared in times like these just in case something does happen.
But I know it sounds like the crews are pretty optimistic that they're going to have this thing fully contained, this wildfire, the Taylor Bridge fire, by Friday of this week. So hopefully you can put your fears and concerns to rest. And we're so thankful that everything is intact for you. Jessica, appreciate you taking the time, because we've been wondering for days when you were going to call us and let us know what happened at your house.
You.
Okay, you take care of yourself.
We really appreciate everybody's support from Como 4, so thank you guys so much.
Oh, we're thinking about you, kiddo. Thank you for being with us.
Seattle's waking up to the Como Morning News 5 to 9. Right now, Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
United Airlines flight leaving SeaTac today had a bit of a delay due to pilot error. The pilot was trying to force close the main passenger door. A flight attendant couldn't pull the main door closed on this Boeing 757. Turns out when the pilot was helping out, instead of closing the door, he forced the emergency chute to deploy. So he accidentally deployed the plane's emergency slide. And all the passengers had to deplane, and they had to get a new slide.
Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
My mama runs faster than you. Those are just some of the things you'll hear from fans at some of the NFL games. You know, when fans get out there and they heckle the athletes, that's one thing. But there is a line that might be being crossed between fans speaking their mind and really distracting a player to the point of where they can't do their job. So what's the NFL trying to do? Well, the NFL is thinking about starting these new policies against anybody who's ever ejected from a game. That all 32 teams are starting this new policy this season, saying that if you are kicked out of a game, you're going to have to take a 4-hour online course and pass that course before you can ever come back into our stadium again. And you're going to have to pay for that class as well, which could cost up to $100, depending on which team is making you take the class. And we've got Como sports editor Tom Glasgow with us. And Tom, what do you think about this? Is it to the point where the NFL has to do this?
Well, first of all, I want to make it clear. I have no experience in being ejected from any games. So we'll start right there, Alicia.
Okay, gotcha.
Look, this is as you mentioned, it's now a league-wide policy. There are certainly trouble spots around the league that stand out above others. Oakland Raider games. Fans maybe cross the line a bit in New York on occasion. But really what this course is about is once you get the boot, you have to take this 4-hour class, as you mentioned, and that really focuses on two categories. Shocking, here we go. Alcohol.
Really?
And anger management. So you have to pass that course, as you mentioned. You also have to pay for the course. I called the Seahawks. They haven't set their fee yet, by the way, for what they're going to charge for that class if it becomes necessary. So it's very interesting, the whole issue of fan behavior, be it at an NFL game or a major league game or any sporting event, is one that we've all probably had experiences with at some time or another.
Because they want the fans, they've got a code of conduct that they want fans to follow, but we've not heard the teams doing a crackdown like this before. And these NFL teams, even the soccer teams and the baseball franchises, they're dependent on these fans, these loudmouth fans who might get out of control.
Well, and I think this is where you get to the point where basically what happens is if you're going to have a fan that's getting out of control, usually that fan is going to get warned. All right, tone it down. If that fan continues to go in the wrong direction at that point, that's where you're going to have police and security step in. And in essence, the club is kind of out of the mix at that point, and then you go through this process if you want to get back into a game. You know, one thing that's interesting is if you're a season ticket holder, it's fairly easy, obviously, to track an individual who may get ejected. If you're a fan that, sits one place, you happen to go to game one and you sit in the 300 level and you're just buying single game tickets and maybe you hit 3 or 4 games a year, it would be much more difficult for a team to kind of keep tabs on one of those fans if they were to be ejected. So in one respect, if you're a season ticket holder, you need to kind of stick to a little bit higher standard because the club and the NFL can keep better taps on you.
And the franchises have had to tap dance around some of these policies before, haven't they? Remember with the T-shirt you were saying that Mariners fans were wearing before?
Yeah, there were some Mariner fans a number of years ago that wore a shirt that said Yankees suck, and Mariners said, that's not acceptable, and then they backstepped from that and said, all right, that's okay. But look, I'm a parent. I will say this, it's what's the old thing? What's pornography? You know it when you see it. What's crossing the line at a sporting event? You know it when you see it, or you know it when you hear it.
Well, you hear it at the Sounders games, don't you?
Well, you have it on goal kicks, and it's not just Sounders games.
But see, what they say at the end in the end zone.
On a goal kick, you'll hear when the opposing goalkeeper is about to take a goal kick, you will hear the phrase, you suck, blank hole, if I can say that. And the commissioner of Major League Soccer wants that out of his sport. He wants it out of all of his stadiums. And so that's another thing they're going to work on. Look, you have, I think, a responsibility, if you're going to a game as an adult, not to get yourself so liquored up that you ruin the experience for people around you, and especially for young people. I shouldn't have to go to a game and try to explain to my now 14-year-old, but this happened a couple of years ago when she was 12, you know, why is that knucklehead behind me dropping an F-bomb every 5 seconds?
Right. So that now we're going to see.
Usually alcohol is involved. So that's usually the igniter.
So that's what they're saying in the NFL, that these classes will be about anger management and about alcohol, and the offenders will have to pay for the class. Well,
look, and you want a safe environment because, you know, when you get these yahoos at some of these events, you know, sometimes fans around them feel like, you know, I'm going to have to take this into my own hands, and you don't want that, and that's when you have fights to break out, and things can get really ugly quickly. And to the NFL's credit and to the Seahawks' credit, and again, any sport you're talking about, they want to nip these in the bud and get them taken care of before they get out of hand.
Hey, you know, a lot of other things happening in sports today, and I want to get your take on it. Did you hear the former Cy Young Award winner, Bartolo Colon of the Oakland A's? He's been suspended for 50 games today after testing positive for testosterone. And this is, what, just a week after the MVP from?
Melky Cabrera. Yeah, yeah. Melky Cabrera for the Giants of the National League, guy who's been in the conversation for National League MVP. Look, these guys, they're idiots. There's so much testing going on right now in Major League Baseball. You are going to be hard-pressed to beat the system. And I'll even take it further. If baseball has to get to the point where you say, you know what, if you have a player on your roster and he gets caught cheating using performance-enhancing drugs, every game that he played in that your team won, you forfeit. Those guys are cheating. They're cheaters. So why should those results stand? So I'm not sure what Colon's record is this year, but every game he won, the A's, frankly, maybe they ought to give that back. And maybe that's another level of punishment that would help rid the sport of these, one, cheaters, and of steroids and human growth hormone.
Yeah, because he's going to miss the final 40 games of the regular season and then the first 10 games of postseason if Oakland even advances that far. And you're saying that's not strong enough. That's not punishment
enough. It is. I think it's strong punishment. You lose those guys. But if you added this other layer, and I don't think this will ever be this is a pipe dream on my part, but I think if you added this type of layer and you're willing, you know, to risk wins that you already have, you know, that's another thing for these guys to think about. But Elisa, here's what's driving them. Money, the opportunity to get the big fat contract. So if they can, guys will especially try to cheat in the final year of a current deal so they can have a great season, head into free agency, score a big multi-year contract, and then get off the stuff.
Hey, you know, we're also hearing there was an ABC News exclusive interview this morning that we're hearing for the first time from Penn State University's president, former president, Graham Spanier, and he's talking about the Jerry Sandusky child abuse scandal. And let's hear a little bit about what he says he knew at the time.
Never in my time as president of Penn State did I ever once receive a report from anyone that suggested that Jerry Sandusky was involved in any child abuse, in any sexual abuse, in any criminal act.
But a lot of people are paying the price, aren't they?
Well, they are. And look, I there's been a mountain of evidence, and there are quite a few folks that were culpable with this situation at Penn State over many, many years. Mr. Spanier will have his day in court. He'll have an opportunity to try to prove what he just said. But from everything I've heard and read, he's got an uphill battle he'll be dealing with.
Tom Glasgow, thanks for taking time to be with us this afternoon.
All right, Elise. Always enjoy it.
Okay, ciao.
Reporting the news, understanding the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
12 minutes before 3, I'm just sitting here in the Como studios for Ken Schramm, Elisa Jaffe, joined by a lifelong comic book geek, obsessed with comic strips, Will Harris. Thanks for being with us.
And thank you. It's a big news. A lot of breaking news in the comic book world.
I know. I had to call you in when I saw that, you know, Superman was ditching Lois Lane.
Yes, but it's for Wonder Woman.
Well, okay, of course. Because, you know, with a chest like that, I would have gone for her, too.
Exactly.
Why is he dropping Lois?
Okay, so here's the deal. So after decades of flirting and almost getting together, I mean, they've been flirting with comics for 25 cents, and now they're $3.99. But anyway, so here's the thing. Here's the deal. So last year, DC rebooted all their continuity. They created a whole new universe where it's like all your heroes are younger, more inexperienced, and he made Superman single.
Oh, okay.
And so he's not really ditching Lois Lane. She's still part of it. Steve Trevor is still hanging around pining after Wonder Woman. But, you know, the people who run DC said, it's about time. Let's do it. You know, now they've hooked up, like, in alternate universes and future storylines. But they say this is the new status quo. It's going to be in Justice League 12 next week, and it's going to be like affect the entire thing. But
well,
I mean,
wait, is this like having somebody from Grey's Anatomy up on Law and Order so that you can cross promote the shows, kind of thing?
They have their solo books and they have the Justice League, but they say this is the status quo for the entire all the DC books. It's going to be Superman and Wonder Woman, and I mean, why not?
And are they going to do it, or are they just going to flirt around?
Well, supposedly they're going to, you know.
Okay.
I mean, come on.
They're going to have a relationship.
He's a godlike hero. She's an Amazon. They both love humanity, but they're both estranged from humanity, and they're both super hot. And, I mean, speaking of, you know, taking it to that next level, I mean, seriously, can a real human actually survive Superman and Wonder Woman, you know? So I went there.
I know you did. And you're really such a dork, but I love that about you. You know that's okay.
And
it's
of course,
okay with
everyone
me.
Wants her to be with Batman, but she only likes the bad girls. He's only for Catwoman. So.
Well, and you were telling me a little while ago that you were reading this book that showed why Wonder Woman came around. Right? Was that, or no?
Well, she's always been flirting. There's always been this flirtation. He kissed her, you know, back in Action Comics 600 in 1988, and she rebuffed him. I mean, but like I said, way, way, way back in World's Finest, an issue of that, they kind of were like, I love you, but I could never, you know, this is old school. I mean, so they've been flirting for years, but next week, they're going to be getting together, they hook up, and that's going to be the new status quo. That's the comic to get next week.
There's another comic that's out there, Batman Incorporated 3. I know this issue was pulled after the tragedy at the Batman movie in Aurora, Colorado. They said, we're not going to put that out, but you did get a peek out. Well, you got a peek at it, and it's out today.
Yeah, it's out today. You know, they delayed it simply because it was too soon, and there was material in it. And I got to tell you, it's on the front page. It's very graphic. You know, that's the thing is, there's different Batman books. There's stuff that's kind of more fun and adventure for kids, and there's stuff that's definitely darker, like the Christopher Nolan movies. And this is one where they said, you know, this is too close. Out of respect for the victims, let's delay it. It came out this week, very little fanfare. So in some way, I have to, you know, applaud DC for not trying to. Because you could have, like, you know, in a time
they
when...
They could have exploited it and really pumped it up,
and
but they didn't.
The comic book industry's hurting, you know. They have to sell issues, so they kind of, you know... But it's out. It's a very dark tale. It's not one I would recommend for the kids, but there are some other Bat books
okay.
for the kids.
Why is it so close to the tragedy? What is it about it that makes you say, ooh, you're right, they were right to pull that?
It's a very similar scenario, but in a different venue, if you will. I don't want to give it away for people who want to read it and tell the whole like ongoing story that's part of it.
Are there really a lot of people who will read this? I'm sorry. I'm so out of it. I want to say name two, but that would be really sarcastic of me, wouldn't it?
Well,
yeah, I know.
Yes,
I know.
It would be. There are a lot of people. I mean, look.
I know Comic-Con is huge.
Comic-Con was huge. 2 weeks ago, I was at Geek Girl Con. It's all women here in Seattle to celebrate the female geek. It was huge. There's a huge fan following. People like comics because they're escapists, but they also reflect on what's going on in our world.
My son and all of his friends in high school are starting to get into them. There's a whole section at the bookstores dedicated to this kind of genre. So
definitely.
I get it. So you're saying it was a good thing for them to pull this.
It's definitely the appropriate thing to do to delay it after what happened there.
We're coming up on the 50th anniversary of Spider-Man.
Today, yeah.
Oh, that's today.
It's the 50th anniversary of Amazing Spider-Man. He's the Dick Clark of comic books. The guy still looks like a teenager. But what do you get Spider-Man for his birthday? They're giving him a teenage sidekick.
Really?
So for the first time ever, and it's kind of weird. People are kind of like, what? You know, it's like...
Male, female, what is it?
He's a young teenager. He's a slacker kid who is in a science class, just like Peter Parker was, when something goes horribly wrong. And at first I thought, oh, you know, we already have Batman and Robin. But, you know, what Uncle Ben Parker always told Peter was, with great power comes great responsibility. So in a way, it's a cool way to grow the character, I think. And he's got a different form of responsibility in some young teenager who suddenly has all these powers.
Oh, that actually sounds sort of fun.
I think it's going to be really cool and can take stories in a new direction. But yeah, issue 692, Amazing Spider-Man, is out today, and they are building up to issue 700. 100.
Oh, my goodness. And for more on this, you can check out Will Harris's blog, comicsblend.com. Get that out there, comicsblend.com. Always fun to talk to you, you geek.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.